It'll be fun to figure out what to include for the bit at the start with this, because mostly we talked about which we can't mention and potential.
Yeah, don't put that in, please.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to an extra special election special of Somewhere in Between, the AIT podcast brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. I'm Anthony, and I'm back with Hatim, Johannes, and Mira. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
So today's episode is an election special because, sadly but truly, my term as AIT chair is coming up to an end. I'll finish in the middle of November, where my successors will take over on the next RCGP council meeting, which is always an exciting day to start off on. So today's episode is really just going to be talking around why you should stand to be the next AIT chair, or excitingly for the first time ever this year to be co-chairs, which we can talk a little bit about during the episode as well. And then talk about some of the challenges I've had throughout the year, but mainly focus on some of the really amazing opportunities that come up by being AIT chair. In terms of logistics, so the nomination period is currently open until the 19th of October at midday. So you have until then to submit your nomination forms. You should all have received an email with the election hub, which you can go to, that has candidate guides, a role description, and the place where you'll go to complete the nomination form, as well as a little video from me, which gives an overview, although you probably won't need to watch it if you listen to this episode. Following the nomination process, the actual election itself will take place for 1 week between the 2nd of November till the 9th of November. So in between that, all of the candidates will have a couple of weeks to campaign and get people to vote for them when the elections open at the start of November. And then once we have the new people in place, we'll have a couple of weeks before I officially finish to hand over and to get them all prepared for their first council meeting on the 21st or 2nd of November. I guess we were going to run this as like a mini interview style conversation. So guys, do you have any questions that you think people would be interested to know around what it means to be the AIT chair or co-chairs?
I mean, I think we've got loads of questions, and it's great because you're in the hot seat, Anthony, instead of us awkwardly interviewing people we've never met before via sort of Zoom or Teams. We know you quite well, so that's quite nice. I guess one of the things we'll say is we're really going to miss Anthony, aren't we? Absolutely. They're both nodding.
Yeah, we weren't hesitating. We were just taking time to unmute ourselves. But yeah.
And this podcast is going to be very strange. So we're going to have to find a way to just have Anthony as our guest every week.
I think so. I think we can shoe him into every sort of topic we come across, right?
There'll yeah, definitely.
A segment from Ant each week.
I mean, he can do life after BTS. He can do... We can go loads of topics.
Absolutely. I guess... a good question to kick it off would be in terms of how did you start this whole journey? Like, when did you become a rep, and kind of what sort of led you to want to apply for this role? Because obviously it's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, so I became a rep for my local area, so North and West London faculty, now like more than 2 years ago, I think. And to be honest, the main reason that I became a rep at the time is because I wanted to just know more around what the college was, what it did. I'd had a couple of friends who'd been reps in different areas, and they made it sound like a really good opportunity. So I went for it, got elected as a rep in my local area. In those days, to be like a local rep, there were also elections, which have now been got rid of, which I think is good because it's made it a bit more accessible and allowed us to grow a much bigger group of reps, which I think has been really positive. And one of the things that I'm happiest about my year as chair is that we did that. But yeah, so after that, I'd had a year where I got to be really involved in lots of really interesting stuff happening at the college. But I guess particularly while I was doing that role, I got really involved in the LGBT work that the college was doing. And it felt like quite a change of direction for the college to be able to do stuff which was much more kind of thinking about equality and diversity. It felt quite progressive for an organization that understandably lots of people have seen as quite old-fashioned in the past. And really, I got to the end of my predecessor Amit's term, and there were a few things that I thought weren't necessarily working that well about the group. And there was lots of things that I would like to see change in the way that the college approaches AIT members. And so it felt like a really good opportunity to be able to take on the role. And I'd just come to the end of a fellowship. I was just coming to the end of doing like another big piece of work, which was for TEDx NHS, which is something that I've been really involved in. And it just felt like a really good time to take on something new. And I felt like I had good ideas. I felt like my experiences throughout the fellowship and TEDx and a few other things had would kind of set me up to do well in that kind of leadership role. And I was also kind of embedded into the college. I understood a bit about how it worked, how to get things done. And so it kind of obviously like came to the forefront of my mind. But even when I was applying, I was definitely in two minds. I wasn't sure if it was the right thing for me to be doing at that time. I wasn't sure if it was going to take up too much of my time, if it was going to be the right opportunity to help me develop the skills that I was most interested in. And so even after I'd written the application form, I was still like definitely not convinced and not 100% certain it was the right decision. Now, a year later, I'm 100% convinced that it was absolutely the right decision. It's been an incredible experience and so much more than I had anticipated, not just because of COVID, but that has obviously been an important part of the mix. So I guess the other main thing that I always say drove me to make the decision was definitely FOMO. So I just like the opportunity was there. I really didn't want to miss out on it. And a year later, I think it was the right decision to stand. And I feel pretty happy and proud about a lot of the things that we've seen happen over the last year.
I think we've talked a lot before about how useful and important it is to network, and it must be an amazing opportunity just to kind of get your tendrils into an organization like the RCGP. On that point, I'm wondering, how receptive did you find the college to your ideas? You know, if you were trying to take the college into a new direction, how did that interaction work with them?
Yeah, I actually have always found the college to be, in my time anyway, to be very receptive of a lot of new ideas. I think also because of the way that the college works, so a lot of the stuff that I was really interested in was very like member focused. So it was all around like community and engagement. There's always been a membership team or people focused on that engagement piece of the college. And so, you know, we kind of were on the same page. They were very receptive to new ideas. There was quite a lot of freedom to be able to try new things, to create new initiatives. Like we've had Celebrate during August. We just kind of came up with the idea and ran with it, and it was really successful. So I think there's been a lot of receptiveness amongst the college staff around being able to do new things, because ultimately, you know, they also really value having a member input. So if you're keen and engaged, then they're always looking to listen to new ideas around how they can further enhance the membership experience of any of their community groups at the college. In terms of, I guess, like the bigger picture professional stuff, so I would say that, you know, there's a whole policy and campaigns team. We've had the opportunity to contribute to big college consultations on different issues throughout the year. They've always been very, you know, those kind of groups are always incredibly keen to have an AIT perspective brought to them. And then working with the offices, I've been fortunate to have like a really close relationship with particularly several of the offices at the college over the last year, who've taken on like a mentor role, including Martin, who's the chair, Mike Holmes, who's the officer for membership and international, and many of the others too. It's been really good to be able to work with them. You know, I think when the big exam stuff happened during the spring, summer because of COVID, you know, naturally there's always going to be some conflict, sounds like too strong a word, but there's always going to be a difference of opinion on certain things. And particularly when you're caught, I think one of the challenges of the role is sometimes being caught in the middle of sometimes a sense of overwhelming expectation from trainees versus the kind of pragmatism and understanding of the reality of the world that the college lives in and how it can make and influence decisions. But despite sometimes during that challenging process, there were slight differences of opinion, by and large, everyone has always been incredibly receptive. The college recognizes that trainees make up, you know, 25% of their membership. It's incredibly important to get the experience that members have early on in their career right. Important for trainees to have a good experience of training and a good experience, obviously, through exams and assessments, and to have a relationship with the college which is based on more than just being the person they have to pay to sit their exams and in the end get recommended for their CCT. So I have found myself very surprised, because when I started off, I didn't necessarily think it was going to be like this, but I've found that everybody has been welcoming, receptive, keen to hear new ideas, and keen to let you kind of be able to lead on some of that AIT work at the college in a really meaningful and impactful way.
That's great. What would be nice to know next would actually, what does the job involve on a day-to-day basis? what were you doing during the role?
Yeah, so I'd say that there are, as with any job, there are really busy periods and really and like less busy periods. But I guess a typical week would involve now all virtual meetings. In a pre-COVID world, it was going into the college particularly. So I've kind of always had at least a day a week just to do chair stuff, which I haven't necessarily always needed the whole day every single week. But by and large, it probably does take up half a day to a day a week if you're doing it on your own. And that traditionally Thursdays was always officer day at the college. So it was when all of the big meetings would happen. So I had Thursday blocked off as my day just to do that. And then even in the digital world, most of those meetings still all happen on a Thursday anyway. So like a typical week would involve, you know, on that Thursday having four or five meetings. They could be often around like curriculum issues, training issues, stuff to do with exams and assessments. I'd always then have meetings with the membership team, so our producer Bryn, who works in the memberships team, as well as others, and talking around kind of the more members focusing stuff that we were trying to do. So whether that might be talking around launching this podcast, doing blogs, other videos, our Celebrate activity, our GP Ready activity. So just catching up with those guys, planning kind of other initiatives. Then in between that, like a spot of mentoring. So I've had like regular one-to-ones with people like Martin and Mike, which has been really, really useful. I'd also say that when it was like caught in the heat of the moment with the exams and assessment stuff, the college were really supportive, recognizing that, you know, there was some understandable difference of opinion on certain issues. They set me up with Helen Stokes Lampard, who was the former chair of the RCGP and is obviously now like removed from the situation, to be able to help mentor me through that experience. So, you know, even if there are certain challenges where your, you know, perspectives don't necessarily 100% align, they've been always supportive to make sure you're in the right hands and getting the right advice throughout any difficult challenges as well, which was really nice and really appreciated. So I guess a typical Thursday would involve just lots and lots of meetings, and then trying to find time around that to actually do the work associated with those meetings. So that might mean, you know, doing kind of some of the administrative stuff around the RCGP AIT community. So whether that's like giving up, like writing updates for them, trying to get perspectives on different policy matters, setting up our regular catch-ups with reps from across the UK, having those meetings. Generally, we've done them in the evenings. There's like loads of stuff that has been going on. Also in between all that, like creating videos, writing blogs, writing pieces for like GP Frontline and other like media outlets. So it's a really varied role. And it's basically kind of infinite the amount of stuff you could get involved with over the year, which is also a kind of something I would say to anyone who's thinking about it, is a year goes really quickly. Have some key things that you'd like to try and address and work on, because you won't be able to do everything. Be realistic. Have as if you were writing something for your portfolio, for your PDP, make it like some smart objectives for the year. I think is really important. But yeah, so I guess a mix of like different meetings on everything you can imagine at the college, and then trying to basically lead and work with their AIT reps to be able to deliver some of that stuff, contribute to college policy, do lots of members focusing stuff. It's really interesting, exciting. Every week is slightly different.
I mean, that all sounds amazing and really interesting, but also obviously really, really busy. And Anthony, I think all the reps that have been in all the meetings through COVID and beyond that, but also lots of people that know how hard you've been working in all of the things that you've just mentioned. And I guess one of the things I wanted to touch upon, because I know how important, you know, well-being and all of that is to you, and, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast before, is I guess as the AIT chair, as well as being an ST3 trainee, how have you achieved that work-life balance? Because obviously I think for people who want to maybe nominate themselves for the role, it would be really important to know how you achieved that and manage that.
So I'm never the best person to ask about like work-life balance tips because I don't necessarily follow them or stick to it so strictly. But I guess, you know, I think the main thing to start off by addressing that is to say that the work I do at the college often really doesn't feel like work. I find it fun and enjoyable, and it really adds something to my week. So I don't find it draining in the way that I might find a particularly challenging day in clinic draining. Obviously, I love general practice by and large, but we all have bad days. Obviously, there have been challenges throughout the year, but generally, I find the stuff I do at the college really energizing. So I think that's the most important thing, is actually the role itself is a lot of fun, and that's really important. But then in terms of, like, you know, the logistics and reality of managing it, so as I say, I always had a day a week, at least a day a week carved out. I did go down to 80% to do this but to do a few other things as well. So I would say that you could get by on having one day a week just out of training. So because basically the practice that I work in, we all get a day off a week anyway, because we work slightly longer days. We have our like self-directed learning and that extra time brought back on one day. So if you were interested and you're in a practice that doesn't currently do that, you could have a chat with them around shifting your hours around slightly so that you do have that protected space to be able to do a role like this. And, you know, I can, if anyone is interested and wants to get in touch with us after this, I can share my job plan with you so that you can see like something that sticks to the current contract and allows you to do that. But then, you know, I did go down to 80% just to be able to feel like I was, you know, had the headspace to be able to do everything. That extended my training. I started in September. I went down to 80% in January, and it has added 7 weeks, I think, to my training. So in the grand scheme of things, isn't that long. Obviously, this is a voluntary role. So there is the financial aspect of going down to 80%. So that might not be an appropriate choice for everybody. But I think if you are able to kind of have that protected one day a week, it's really definitely doable. As I say, at different times of the year, the workload can get quite intense. This year, that's been especially so because of COVID and all of the changes. But, you know, I think it would have been, in retrospect, it probably would have been manageable on that job plan if it hadn't have been for COVID. And who knows what the next year will hold. So I think being realistic about your time, I started out at 100%, knew it probably wasn't going to work for me, and so did go down to 80%. And I think that's definitely been the right decision. I've been able to focus, it's given me enough headspace to focus on my training as well as the role. But yeah, I think the other important thing is having a good support network around you. So, you know, you guys and the other reps have been in part of that incredible support network. And that is one of the most, you know, valuable things about being the co-chair, is that you do have this team of other reps behind you. You also get a huge amount of support from staff and officers at the college. You know, my husband has also been incredibly supportive through what has been a busy and challenging year. And I think it is important to think around who your rock or your person like that is, and then be able to talk to them about perhaps some of the challenges that might come up in a role like this. So yeah, I think those are the main things. Also just, you know, like not losing sight of the other things that you're interested in, you know, that might be exercise or hobby or whatever it is, just making sure that you take enough time for you and your friends. You know, part of the nice bit about, you know, for example, this podcast is that there's like an overlap between friends, colleagues, you know, it all kind of balances together. So, I think it's massive. I think it's really rewarding role. The most important thing is that the role itself is really fun, but, you know, it does take some planning around that to make sure that everything balances up.
Is this maybe a good time to have a quick chat about the new situation with co-chairs and how maybe that will shape what happens in the future?
Yes, definitely. So, so in the past, we've always had just a single chair of the AIT group at the college. And as you can imagine from hearing the stuff I've just been saying, it can get quite intense at times in terms of the workload. So this year, we've introduced the opportunity for people to stand as co-chairs, so to share the role between two people. We're lucky in the fact that we get two seats on college council, which is something I haven't actually mentioned, but that's a really important part of the job as well, is representing AITs at the national council, where you get to make decisions on the future of general practice. You get to make decisions on all the important policy aspects that the college is working on and vote on those. So we have two AIT chairs at seats at council, which will now be, if you were co-chairs, you would each get one of those. I think that being able to share it between two people just makes it all the more manageable. You have your rock next to you, who's helping you to support one another throughout the process. Obviously, you'll bring like two sets of ideas, enthusiasm and energy to the role. And I think it's also important for me, one of the really important things around introducing the potential to be co-chairs is around making the role more accessible and hopefully getting a more diverse pool of candidates to stand for it. Before I was chair, so I'm not an academic trainee, and before I was chair, there's only been one, I think, non-academic trainee ever to stand for the role and always ever to get it. And while obviously, you know, academic trainees are incredibly important and, you know, valid, this isn't to undermine academic trainees in any way, but I think it's important that it feels like a doable role for a full-time trainee as well. You know, so academic trainees have often had a bit more space or flexibility in their time to be able to do the role effectively. I don't think that should be necessary to do it. So we hope that by co-chairs, you'll be able to share it between you. You'll be able to be from, you know, a full-time trainee or someone with a young family to look after or other commitments, and it still will be an opportunity that you can take advantage of, which I think is really important.
I think it's a unique time as well in terms of us being more in a digital world. How do you think that will impact things? Obviously, COVID-19 is still around, and that's also a key factor. But also in terms of accessibility, I just remember previously a lot of people sort of complaining about sort of the London-centricness of some of the things that the college does and the AIT committee does. I think we're in a unique space now where we can use digital to probably hopefully expand the reach of the work that we can do.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's also really important, is that another type of trainee that we've never had as AIT chair is anybody from the devolved nations. I don't think, anyway, someone will correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure. But so I think in the new world where the kind of face-to-face culture has disappeared, and even in the world post-COVID, there's no intention from the college's perspective that everything will go back to face-to-face meetings. So, you know, Zoom and the way of doing things digitally and remotely is going to be here to stay. So, you know, even no matter where you are in the UK, you can still take on this role and do it as effectively, which I think is really important. Before me, Amit, my predecessor, was from Cumbria, and so was having to travel hours and hours and hours each week up and down to London to be able to attend meetings and things. Obviously, it's nice to be able to travel, visit the college, etc., but it's also, for him, I know it was incredibly exhausting at times. He was also in the process of like coming towards finishing part of his training. He was in the process of getting married. It was a lot for anybody to deal with all of that travel on top. So I think it's been, you know, I've managed to build really good relationships with people. I've managed to get stuff done, to be able to start new things. Despite doing things remotely, it hasn't been a barrier to being able to do those. So I think that the new digital way of doing things is going to really enhance the role, and hopefully, again, will mean that more people feel it's an opportunity that they're able to take up on and stand for.
I mean, I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head there about how obviously COVID has been a big challenge in the year that you've been doing this role, but hopefully looking at the positive things that have come out from it in terms of accessibility to all, and also wanting to open it up to more people who may not have thought about it purely just from a logistics perspective. I thought it'd be quite nice, Anthony, to ask you sort of what your sort of favourite memories of doing this job are over the last 12 months. Like what will you sort of look back on fondly? And maybe if I cap you to top three.
I'm not sure if I should say things where I think they've had the most impact or things that I've enjoyed the most. I guess maybe we'll do a mix. So I mean, I do have to say that in terms of impact, the changes to exams in the RCA is a highlight, just because it wasn't necessarily the experience that I was expecting to have this year. And it really got me involved in very high level conversations with all of the different stakeholders that are involved in GP training and healthcare in the UK. You know, everybody from, you know, Martin at the college to, you know, we were sending letters to the Secretary of State at one point, and, you know, ministerial involvement from the Department of Health and the Health Select Committee. You know, that was a real experience, and it really allowed me to develop, you know, like leadership and negotiation skills, which I wasn't necessarily expecting to do on that kind of in that arena this year. And I guess the end result was that I was trying to do something that would benefit a huge number of trainees, which I really feel has been delivered on. And so I do feel quite proud of being involved in that process. Obviously, it's like an incredibly collaborative process, but to be able to be part of that has been something that I'm going to take away and feel proud of after that when I do finish. So I guess that's one. Two would be, I feel I'm going to do four. So two would be changes to the AIT like rep system. So as I mentioned, we got rid of elections. We're now, there's going to be another podcast episode about this. We're now just kind of have further refined how AITs are represented at college to create a new group called the AIT Advisory Network, which I think has been really positive and will continue to be positive. Again, thinking about the diversity that we have in the rep voice at college, the way that people can, a much bigger pool of people can help to influence some of what the college does and enhance AIT membership experience. So I think that's something that I will take away as something I've enjoyed and feel proud of. Third is going to be this podcast. You know, it has made, particularly throughout lockdown, it's been so good to be able to catch up with you guys most weeks. We've spoken about some really interesting issues. We've stuck with it. We've kept going. I've really enjoyed listening back to the episodes where I thought I would just feel like cringing the whole time. And we've had some really good feedback from them. So I think it's been a really nice part of being able to do this. It's something the college hadn't done before. So it's just, again, part of that kind of bigger comms and engagement piece around further representing what it means to be a trainee at the college. And then finally, over the last couple of months, we've had Celebrate and GP Ready, two new, completely new programs of activity, one all focused on trainees, and the other one, GP Ready, focused on people who are at that transition from training into independent practice as a first five. And these were programs started during COVID while loads of the actual RCGP team were on furlough. People were dealing with massive challenges in their workload in terms of like our reps and stuff. And we still managed to deliver two whole months worth of activity on a shoestring, which I thought was really engaging, was again completely new and a different way of doing things that the college hasn't necessarily embraced so much before. You know, as part of them, we did Instagram Lives. The one for GP Ready was with my, was me and Martin Marshall, the chair of the college, like having a bit of a chat around the future of general practice. I had to teach Martin how to use Instagram, which was an experience in and of itself. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that. And so I just think being able to do that has been a massive team effort during a really challenging time. And I've loved being a part of that and the kind of sense of satisfaction and teamwork that I've got out of those. So those are my four, probably.
I think we also just need to put a disclaimer in. We did not ask him to mention the podcast in his sort of...
I was very impressed that we made the list. We were number three. We weren't even number four.
I know, exactly.
I was hoping we're kind of going to be number one, but...
We've also given Anthony an international listener base. As we know, we've got listeners from all over the world, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, hello Russia, hello LA, hello, hello the world.
And I guess it probably would be a fitting end, unless, you know, Johannes Hatton, you had any other questions. I think the thing I wanted to ask... Anthony, as this year is sort of coming to an end for you and you'll be handing over the mantle, is what are you looking forward to in the next 12 months sort of for you?
Oh, for me? Well, I'm just anticipating my final ARCP to take place, hopefully at some point very soon. I guess what I'm looking forward to is, while I've had an amazing experience over the last 4 years during training, I do feel ready to take the next steps. I've got a job lined up in my training practice for 5 sessions a week, which I'm really looking forward to doing. I get to do a bit of substance misuse, which is something I'm interested in as part of that role. So that'll be good. And then I'm taking on some other, I have like additional flexibility to take on some other opportunities as well. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, this year has been, my training experience generally has been fairly flexible. Like I took a year out to do a fellowship. I've obviously been less than full time to do the AIT chair role during this year, as well as a few other things along the way. But I'm really looking forward to feeling an even greater sense of autonomy over my future. And I think it's, you know, I do think it's a really exciting time to be becoming a GP. There's no denying that there's lots of ongoing challenges, but I think that there's also a huge amount of potential. There's an ever-growing range of different opportunities out there for people. And yeah, it feels like a really exciting time to be becoming a GP. And in terms of the other stuff that I'll be doing, I'll be announcing that soon. It's not really particularly exciting, but it's just still being ironed out. So we'll see.
I love the way of keeping everyone on suspense.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't feel like it's going to be a massive like reveal or something. It's not.
I mean, let's just say watch this space. And obviously we'll be speaking to Anthony all the time, as we've already discussed in all of our future podcast episodes. So I guess, Anthony, the main thing is getting people who have listened to this episode either to think of people they think would be really good for the role, or even if they think themselves they would like to go up for it, or, you know, have a co-chair in mind or something like that. The main message of the episode today is sort of go for it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly that. I've written a list of things that I wanted to talk about, and at the bottom of it, it just is a massive do it with a few exclamation marks underlined. So yeah, definitely. If you have, even in the corner of your mind, a vague interest that this is something you might want to nominate yourself for, or think there's somebody else who would be great for it, I would just either go for it or really encourage them to do the same. As I say, I think this is a role where you can make a genuine impact on training and the experience that AITs have at the college, but beyond that, also having an influence on the future direction of general practice as a whole. To me, that's what differentiates this role as an AIT rep, or as what would be the AIT co-chairs, hopefully, from other organisations like the BMA or Health Education England or other statutory education body reps, is that the college is very much focused on championing general practice, the future of the profession, influencing policy at a high level. And I think that as an AIT within the college, you really get to be involved in that. And as the chair, that's, you know, where you really get to take on some of the responsibility for delivering some of that and contributing to a lot of the good work that goes on there. So I would, you know, I've had an amazing experience. I've developed loads. I feel like I'm leaving a much richer person at the end of it. I've made, you know, amazing connections, new colleagues, loads of new friendships, which I'll be taking forward with me into my next steps of my career. And I just think, yeah, I've just really enjoyed it. And it's been amazing to do it through a particularly important time as we all meet the challenges of COVID, which also aren't going anywhere. So whoever takes over after me will have a lot to think about. They're going to have the future of the exam to think about. They're going to have, again, future of training and how it needs to altered to meet the new world that we're all working in a much more digital, remote way. And I think it's going to be exciting to see whoever takes it on, what they manage to achieve in their year as well. So yeah, I just feel excited about my future, but also excited about whoever takes it on and seeing how they do. And I will be there to help support them if they need it throughout the process as well.
Yeah, no pressure at all. You don't have to achieve all of that.
No, everyone has to achieve it. Yeah. As I said, the main thing is just having fun, and you will be enabled to do that if you take it up.
I think if we had our sort of soundboard that we've been talking about for all of these episodes, we'd just have a really nice ah and a round of applause. So we probably should just leave it there, right?
I think that's it. Yeah, that's all I've got to say. Do it. Go for it. Cool. So, I mean, that is it. I forgot I have to actually finish the episode. Not for long. One of you guys will have to take over this soon. But yeah, thank you so much for listening, everybody. I really do hope that if you are, you know, considering it in any small way, that you do go for it. As I say, check out the Election Hub. If you can look for your emails for AIT elections, it will be sitting in there. Go to the Hub, check out the candidate guide. And if you're interested or have any additional questions which you'd like to ask, then do just get in touch with us here at the college. You can either get in touch with me on Twitter at Dr. Anthony James, or if you email anthony.james@rcgp.org.uk, I'm more than happy to answer any questions you have, set up a phone call to discuss the role, whatever you would find helpful in helping you to make that decision. So yeah, that's everything. Go for it. Do stand. When the nomination process is closed, also obviously remember to vote. I think that's something that we haven't said, but the most important thing I think is it is really vital that we continue to have strong AIT representation at the college. So in order to maintain that, it's really important that we have a good turnout, that you make sure that the person that you think is going to do the best job is elected into the role. So go for it between the 2nd of November to the 9th of November when the elections are open. Do vote as well. And that's it. Thank you for listening. We'll be back very soon for another episode of Summer in Between. Until then, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye, guys.
Bye. See ya. That's going to go in the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.